Okay, so yeah, this is short. This is probably pretty fucking lame. But I won't lie, it's just like I read about it a while ago and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And I've just like wanted to go back. There's just not a whole lot on it. So that's where I'm at right now.
Hey, that's totally fine. I think introducing new ideas is just as important as digging into the old.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. This is going to be a mini lesson in something new.
Yee!
You're listening to Something Weird. I'm Brooke, and here's our co-host, Anna.
Hello, everyone. Here you'll find semi-regular dialogue on all things paranormal, or even just a little bit weird. We're lifelong friends who have an affinity for the strange since we first met, and now we're here to explore these phenomena with you.
Each week, one of us will dig into a paranormal tale as we ponder the question, do we want to believe? And it's my turn. So I've got a little story for you. Story time. Like I was saying before, this is something that I've come across just in, our paranormal research, trying to find the best topics. And I've had it kind of tucked away, and I felt like it was time to give it a go. So let's see what you think.
All right.
Okay, so you're probably familiar with the name Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes.
Okay, good.
For once, I can give you a yes.
Okay, I was like, oh no. She's doubting herself.
Yeah, actually, interestingly enough, oh, it was in Devil in the White City.
Yeah.
He comes up as one of the architects that was fired. So that was a strange kind of connection
Yeah,
that I
gosh.
noticed.
That book, the amount of people that come through that story, or you're just like, what the fuck? It's
Yeah,
insane.
heyday.
Yeah, really. Well, we probably, when we think of architecture, we can think of maybe a few names, but I would imagine almost everyone can think of the name Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank is probably considered one of the best, or the best, American architect of all time. He was born in 1867. He's an American architect, and he is known for his innovation and genius through his designs. He's designed, or he had designed, over 1,000 different structures, from homes to museums, think like Guggenheim, to random buildings in cities and parks, etc. He is known for very famous landmarks. Probably the best known and a big tourist attraction is his home and feature, Falling Water, that you can visit in Pennsylvania, which I would love to go to someday.
I'm surprised you haven't actually already.
I know. Well, I'm trying to think if I've. Oh, I did go to Pittsburgh once, but for like 48 hours. So
Yeah.
I would love to go. And of course, Falling Water is considered to be the best all-time work of any American architect. His designs are known for their organic kind of flair and flow, blended with a sort of modern touch that was pretty rare considering the time of his designs, which was mostly through the early 1900s into the 30s and 40s. So not only is he known for his amazing architecture, he's also known for his interesting and unique personality. He was described, or has been described, as very colorful, again, unique. And he also is known for his interesting private life, or you could just say his love life, really. I don't know if you know much about, have you heard, like, he was a player, to say the
No,
least.
I know nothing about him as a person. I honestly don't know much about his architecture either. I know that he's an architect, a great one, know some of his works, but nothing about the man behind the lines.
Fair enough. So there's this book that I've had on my list of books to read since I was like 16. I don't know why I haven't read it. It's called Loving Frank, and it's all about the different women that were love interests of Frank Lloyd Wright throughout his lifetime. And there were many, and there's a lot of messy stories. And he just kind of did whatever he wanted and whoever he wanted, whenever he wanted. So, yeah, he's got some stories.
Was he hot?
I'll share a picture in a moment. Just hold on. But he was like, he was Frank Lloyd Wright. There was no one else like him. So I feel like he's just one of those figures where he's considered to be a genius. He's an artist. He's this like innovator. So yeah, he's cleaning up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Gross. Pose in different area codes.
But really, he had many lovers, you could say. But one relationship in particular is where we see a dark sort of ominous story appear. So we're going to go back to 1903. Wright had been commissioned to work on a home for a wealthy businessman by the name of Edwin Cheney. And it was through this work that he would meet Martha, a.k.a. Mama, Borthwick Cheney. Martha was indeed...
Mama!
Mama. You can probably guess Martha was indeed Edwin's wife. So by all accounts, he was completely smitten and taken by Martha, Frank was, and very soon became obsessed with her. And it seems, according to those that knew them, I guess, that that obsession went both ways. So they were just completely enamored, head over heels, infatuated with each other.
Hmm.
So it didn't take too long for the two of them to partake in a passionate love affair. But there were some problems. One was that Martha was married and had two kids. And the other was that Wright himself was not only married to Catherine Lee, aka Kitty Tobin, but he also had six children of his own.
This guy fucks.
Yeah. Big time.
That's so awful, but like, I'm just imagining Russ from Silicon Valley saying
I that. Love that scene so much. We say that so much. Just any time it's appropriate / not appropriate. This guy fucks. But no, like, he
oh
did.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, marriages, kids, whatever, that wasn't getting in Frank's way. To him, this was no big deal. He firmly believed that Martha was his intellectual equal and was so different that he is quoted as saying, "A man needs two women, one to be a mother of his children and the other to be his mental companion, his inspiration, and his soulmate." Okay.
Whatever you need to tell yourself, bud. You could also just have friends.
You could also,
you know, serve as these.
Or just, like, respect the mother of your children. Get to know her. Have a conversation. You've got options.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Weird. Don't like it.
They were in a bit of a pickle, but still, it didn't bother Wright at all. He was fine with it. So, as a solution, he decided that the best thing to do was to leave his family and his wife and build a new separate house where he and Martha could live separately in privacy without the public eye scrutinizing and giving criticisms to their affair. He thought it would be a sort of secret getaway, hideaway sort of situation for them, but literally everyone knew about it. Like, everyone knew that he was just making the rounds with whoever. And this fucking picture of him is just the smug look on his face. Hang on a second. It perfectly captures this guy. This fucking bitch. Don't get me wrong, I love his work, but like, come on.
Okay. Fuck you.
Smug little bitch. Yeah, I got bitches. Got bitches all across the country.
That's exactly the caption. oh, he is so pleased with himself.
Of course he's pleased with himself. He's got it made. Not only did he leave his wife and his children and build this little secret love affair house out in wherever it is, the two of them, Frank and Martha, they ran off to Europe together for a while to really, you know, solidify that love affair. And it was while they were in Europe that construction began on his newest project, which is called the Taliesin, I think is how you say it correctly. Called the Taliesin, which means a shining brow in Welsh. This was to be their residence, Frank and Martha together, as well as his studio where he would work. And it was built finally in 1911 in Spring Green, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's a beautiful building. No surprise. All of his work is. Stately building, and one that you would definitely expect from Frank at the time, like classic Frank Lloyd Wright design. He would also do some of his best-known works while he was living there and working out of that studio. While living here, the two lovers lived, for the most part, in peace, for the most part, in private, although really, talk around town, everyone knew what they were doing, and everyone knew that he had left his wife and she had left her husband and two children. The media definitely ate it up and wrote lots of stories in which they would refer to their new house as the, quote, Castle of Love.
That's not very, like, damning.
I know. It sounds kind of nice, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
I guess... It sounds like that sex shop castle megastore.
Oh, yeah. But also, like, at the time, I feel like a story of a man stepping out on his wife and children is just, like, another day, another dollar.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, things are looking great for Frank and Martha. However, this is where the dark clouds start to arise.
Ooh.
Today, this property, the Taliesin in Wisconsin, is considered to be one of the most cursed and haunted pieces of property in the area.
Whoa. Oh,
yeah. It all goes back to a summer afternoon, August 15th, in the year 1914. So on this day, Wright was in Chicago. He was working on the design for the Midway Gardens, which I guess is a thing in Chicago. Haven't been, but he was designing. At lunchtime, Martha and two of her children, it was 8-year-old Martha, little Martha, and 12-year-old John, they had sat down to eat on the porch at Taliesin. Inside the main dining room, at the other end of the massive, classic Frank design, 25-foot-long table, Wright's draftsmen and different workers were also gathered working on some new designs. So, as this is happening, again, Martha and the kids are eating outside. The draftsmen and the workers are working on a new project inside, kind of across this giant-ass table and gathering space. One worker in particular came to the table to serve lunch. He was a Barbados native, and his name was Julian Carlton, a handyman and a servant who had spent the summer waiting tables and performing housework at Taliesin. Carlton's wife, Gertrude, did most of the cooking in the house. As the draftsmen and workers are eating at the dining table, one of the draftsmen, Herbert Fritz, noticed something unusual was going on. He's quoted as saying, "We heard a swish as though water was thrown through the screen door. Then we saw some fluid coming from under the door. It looked like dishwater. It spread out all over the floor." After serving the soup to Martha and the children, Carlton, our Barbados guy, instructed his wife to leave the house. Said, "Get out. You don't want to be here." Then he returned to the porch, where Martha and her children were, wielding a hatchet, and attacked Martha and the two children before dousing the floors with gasoline and setting the entire house ablaze.
What?
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wait. Okay.
Inside of the house, at the dining room on the other end of the giant table, where the workers were having lunch, suddenly everything burst into flames. The door had been locked from the other side. With his clothes burning and his hair on fire, Herbert Fritz, one of the draftsmen, jumped out of the window next to where he was seated and rolled down the hillside to put out the flames. When he looked back, he saw Taliesin in flames and saw Carlton swinging a hatchet at his co-workers, who had managed to force open the dining room door and to escape through the window to the courtyard.
And he rolled across the road.
And then he went in there. Terrible.
Okay, aside from, pardon quoting ourselves from our Sasquatch movie from, you know, 18 years ago, that is, how have I never, like, why right? isn't that a bigger story?
I had never heard of it when I came across this, and I was just like, what the, this is insane.
That's wild.
Yeah, so, hold on, just wait. So, the rest of the workers, they're out the window, they're in the courtyard, they're getting attacked by Carlton and his hatchet. Though they were badly burned and wounded, the 35-year-old carpenter, Billy Weston, and the landscape gardener, David Lindblom, managed to escape with Fritz, so the three of them are good. They hurried a half mile to the nearest house with a phone to call for help. The people who rushed to the scene found the bodies of Martha, her two children, two of the workers in the house, and a 13-year-old boy. David Lindholm later died from his burns.
So this guy was not happy.
No, he took out, what is that? 3, 4, 5. He took out 6 people in that.
6 people.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Dang.
Yeah.
Quickly, too.
Yeah. Very quickly.
And a lunchtime massacre.
Burned the whole place down. Hours after the attack, Carlton was discovered barely conscious inside the basement furnace of the house because he had swallowed muriatic acid. Is that correct?
I don't know.
Muriatic acid. He never gave a reason for his attack, and he died from starvation 7 weeks later.
What?
Gertrude, his wife, said her husband had become increasingly paranoid in the week prior to the attack, even keeping a hatchet in a bag next to his bed. Rumors spread that Carlton had been harassed by some of the workers at Taliesin, and there had been an argument a few days before the attack over the saddling of a horse.
Oh.
Like, what?
1903 problems.
Seriously. One of the surviving workers told the police that Martha had told the Carltons that they were being let go. Gertrude, the killer's wife, confirmed that they were due to the train back to Chicago that night. So, why? Still a big question mark. But the theories were,
yeah,
he's pissed because he's getting fired. He and his wife are getting fired. He's pissed because he's being harassed. Or he's just suffering. None of the actual stories or like publications said anything about like mental health issues, but to me it sounds like he was probably suffering from some sort of mental health issue given the paranoia the weeks prior.
Yeah, and that kind of response to getting fired is not what I would generally turn to.
No. Well, and it's so really frustrating because like yeah, obviously clearly there's something more going on here, but it was frustrating to read some of the theories and what the newspapers were saying about him because it was just so dismissive of obviously a much larger issue that he was dealing with. It was just like, oh, well, he's from Barbados. He is a minority. So he was being mistreated and he just got fed up with it. And like, that was his retaliation for being mistreated. Just as almost as a like, of course that's what he did, right?
Yeah.
It was just like very offensive and very dismissive of him as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Not excusing his behavior. It was just very like, put the blame on the race, ultimately, is what it sounded like. But regardless, like an absolute tragedy, an absolute horror that took place in this house. So the tragedy hits the news in a major way. All eyes were on Frank Lloyd Wright to see how is he going to respond. Like his epic love affair, two of her children, his workers, like this happened in his house. And one of his greatest pieces of work, the Taliesin, is gone. So everyone's asking, what is he going to do? So in an act of defiance, he decided that he would rebuild the estate. And he would call it Taliesin 2.
All right, so creative in some ways.
Sure. In the meantime, he went abroad. He decided that he would put his focus elsewhere. No judgment. Do what you gotta do. So he goes abroad to Tokyo, Japan, and he started working on the Imperial Hotel. He also wasted no time finding a new woman and falling in love once again with a woman by the name Miriam Noel, who he would later marry in 1923, when his divorce from his first wife finally went through. So that whole thing with Martha, he was married.
Not even legitimate.
He was still married. So he finally gets divorced. He marries Miriam. But a few years later, in 1928, he would marry again to Olgivana Lazovic, hoping maybe third time is a charm. I don't know. Unfortunately, the bad luck continued for Wright and his house. In the meantime, another fire hit in 1925 to the Taliesin II due to faulty wiring. So again, the Taliesin had to be rebuilt and was called
Taliesin III. Oh.
Only a couple years later, the estate fell into financial ruin and was nearly foreclosed on in 1927. Wright had been kicked out and was barely managing to reacquire his estate when he received some financial help from friends.
Wow, so he really fell from grace.
Yeah. Well, kinda.
Ish?
I mean, like, he died an architectural genius.
Okay, he went broke? I don't know, like, how do you go broke when you've got all these projects going on? And
I don't know, but I feel like rich people do that all the time. I don't understand how people make, but also it could have just been, like, the estate itself. And yeah. I don't understand rich people things like that. I just don't.
Well, I mean, no one should ever even pay attention to questions when it comes to money and me, because I clearly don't know what I'm doing. So
I don't know. Whatever. But he struggled. He was able to overcome with the help of his friends. But despite all of these issues and the tragedy that hung over this place and this estate, Frank decided that he would live out the rest of his days there. And he lived there and worked there until his death in 1959. He used it as his home, his studio, and eventually a sort of museum of sorts, with a vast collection of Asian artworks that he had collected throughout his career.
Okay.
So in 76, it was designated as a National Historic Landmark, and then UNESCO designated it as a World Heritage Site in July of 2019. So still considered, like, quite the thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if you're like me, with all of this bad luck and kind of dark cloud and tragedy surrounding this place, you're probably thinking, ghosts.
Yeah, it's for sure. 100%. Spirits galore, demies.
Demies.
Everything.
Yeah, it's got to be haunted. And you're not wrong. Right after the attack that took place, that took Martha, the workers, and her children, firefighters took the dying and badly burned victims into a cottage on the property called Tanadiri. It was in and around that cottage where Martha's spirit has been reported over the years. She is usually dressed in a long white gown, and while she is a peaceful presence, she is obviously very restless and lost as she wanders about the area. It is also said that the doors and the windows open and close by themselves all the time. And this is in the cottage where many of those people died. And lights sometimes will turn on and off. Witnesses that have gone to the property and Taliesin itself say that they often close the place for the night only to return the following day to find everything wide open. Also, tourists that come and tour Taliesin, which you can still do, apparently, tourists that come through have made reports of seeing figures and shadows, feeling like someone is tapping on their shoulder as they walk through the property, and also hearing the screams and cries of children.
Ooh, we've got to add that one to our road trip list. Yeah. A must do.
For sure. All of this said, it's a renowned piece of property. It's a historical landmark. And honestly, no one ever talks about it, which I think is insane. To my knowledge, no one has said anything about this.
No, you would kind of feel like, just because he comes up so often in so many references and pop culture and artists and just everything, I'm surprised like a movie hasn't been made.
Right? That's what I was thinking. It's like, this is...
Even just that part. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, not only about his life and how fucking crazy it is, but this, like that, and that one property and all of that horrible stuff happening, like that is prime. I had the same thought.
That's like AHS anthology, like a whole series could be. And what a sexy story, too. I mean, like, pretend he didn't look the way that he did. Well, but I mean, it really, it has it all. Intrigue, money, sex, murder,
everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We should just write a screenplay.
We should pitch it. For sure. Yeah, and that's kind of it. Just this baffling, surprising story of the very well-known Frank Lloyd Wright and this seemingly dark and haunted past.
Wow. Okay. That was a lesson.
Sure.
I liked it.
Okay. It was short and sweet.
No, that's super interesting.
But I guess it just had me thinking about that one property in particular, like maybe there's something that's left there from the tragedy. And that's a conversation that we've had over and over. Like when something evil happens, it just makes sense that there's spirit or energy or something left over from that. But I guess as I was reading through this and thinking about it, my sort of question for you is not so much, do you believe it or not? I guess it's more around, do you believe that places or houses can be evil? Or is it simply the presence within them? You know what I mean? Like, think American Horror Story and the murder house. Is the place evil, or is it what's left behind in a place that creates it?
That's a great question. And I feel like we've actually been kind of tapping into that in a lot of the recent episodes from, you know, cursed films. Like, it's not the actual film, videos, cassette, or whatever.
I don't know. I guess my easy answer would be, there's nothing of a place or a house or a building that could, in my logic, tells me that could allow it to be haunted or to like harbor evil spirits or demons or whatever, or like that kind of energy. It has to be something that was either there before or left there. And that's just how I've always thought about it and understood like hauntings in general. But I don't know, maybe there is a world or maybe there is a way where it's simply just the creation of a place or like the place itself can be evil and like bring in evil. I don't know.
That's a tough one because it's like you watch all of these scary movies and all this shit's happening in the house. They've just moved in. It's not like they're settled in. There's still boxes everywhere. They haven't hung pictures, and they're like, oh my god, there's blood coming from the walls, and mom just tried to murder me. None of this was happening at the mall a week earlier. It's clearly, like, that space. Why don't they just leave? Call U-Haul, get just another get thing. But they don't. So, maybe, gosh, I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I think I'm erring towards the same side as something has to have occurred or been physically brought there by something. You know, you hear of these stories where something's built on a grave site and then, like, it's cursed.
Yeah,
like, but it's not the actual house necessarily. It's not the actual bricks and mortar. It's the sensation, I guess, around it.
So I guess the question is, for this particular one, for the Taliesin, what caused it? You know, what made this such a seemingly evil place or place of bad luck or place of darkness where these bad things just kept happening? Or was it simply bad luck? Just bad stuff happens. And somehow, some way, Frank Lloyd Wright was able to look past it and only see his beautiful creation. I don't know. That seems insane to me. I don't know how you stay in that house, but he did.
Yeah. For me, like, faulty wiring, that's just a, hey, that happens. So that one's not too surprising. He did get bailed out by his friends, so whatever. I really think it's just a lot of shitty things that happened in that one place. And the initial murder was, that stemmed from something that that man was just dealing with. Mm-hmm. And anything bad happening after, it's kind of just like noticing those patterns right. again. And yeah. Frank just really loved that house. I don't know. I don't get it.
Big fan, apparently. Yeah, I think I side with you on this one. Like, I think it's a really interesting story. Like I said, I've kind of had this and wanted to talk about it for a long time. But ultimately, I think the reason that I never have is because I'm just like, well, that's just incredibly unfortunate. We'll probably never know what that man was suffering from and why he did what he did. And yeah, that's just bad luck. And I think that that's really what it comes down to, but a fascinating story nonetheless, I think.
Oh yeah. All right, Frank
Lloyd Wright, man. I think I'm finally going to read that book about him and his women.
Might as well now.
Yeah.
Got to get prepared for our screenplay.
Seriously, we should get writing on that.
God, I can only imagine.
You
surprise me with all of your, like, the difference of your stories. I keep looking at my topics and thinking, this is all about just cursed objects. Like, I need to branch out.
No, but you keep us steady with, like, the actual paranormal stuff. I'm always just, like, bringing in random shit that's not even probably paranormal at all, but...
Well, it is. People are saying they're feeling taps and hearing screams.
I guess. Well, there's something you may not have known about Frank Lloyd Wright, even if you are familiar with his architecture and much of his work. Something interesting. Maybe a little paranormal. Maybe Frank was into that. I don't know. I need to learn more about him. See what his thoughts were on all of this spook around this estate. But we would love to hear what your thoughts are. You heard our take. Give us yours. Think that there's something going on here? Is it just bad luck? Or maybe you have an interesting story from visiting one of his sites, one of his properties. Let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Something Weird Podcast. And if you have any other story that you want to share with us, we would love to hear those as well. All of the chilly details, share, please. Whether it's paranormal, spooky, or just plain weird.
And if you enjoyed this episode, this telling of our infamous Frank, as much as I did, or any of our other episodes, please let us know with a big 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. It makes a delightful difference. Really makes our days. I know we just repeat ourselves on that, but it truly does. So get on there. Leave it. We need the truth out there.
All right. Well, thank you, Anna, for listening as always. It's always fun to share a little story with you. And listeners, thank you for coming back. Until next time.
Stay weirdy.
Yeah.